It is 8:08 here on the morning show. Ashley and Brian with you. And we decided we'd pick out some music from Joker for you. And it's Rock and Roll Part 2 by Gary Glitter, not held in the same esteem as he was when he wrote this. One of the complaints about the movie. We're going to talk mostly about other things related to the movie with Mike Mayo. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. And let me start out by saying, despite all of the money it made, I mean, Joker just had the biggest opening ever for an R-rated movie in October, something like that. Whatever, you know, superlative right. they've got for it. It's not a good movie. I don't understand why it's so popular. I don't understand all of the critical praise it's gotten, though about half the critics agree with me, and half are saying it's the most wonderful thing ever. To me, it is just kind of this big mess of a movie going over. It's an origin story for the Joker, which I've seen told in other places. Yes, this takes a different take, you know, kind of approach to it, but I just did not care for this movie. It was about very unattractive characters. It kind of looks ugly all the way through. It is kind of an homage to Martin Scorsese. There are various references to Taxi Driver and The King of Comedy and a lot of other movies like that I don't quite understand in what is essentially a comic book movie, but there they are. And now it has kind of generated a whole bunch of political criticism. People saying that it is meant to be an apology for young white male Trump voters or something. I'm not sure what all that is, but I read the piece that we're going to talk about, and I agree that it kind of synopsizes the movie fairly well, but I don't think it's really fair to make your criticism based on that kind of simple plot synopsis. It's kind of easy to see that, but I'm not sure it's very useful. And then you describe what they did here, or what this whole argument is.
So this is it's Jerry Yang, and he's writing this in CNN, and I'll have this up in our Twitter feed in just a moment. And he essentially says that this movie is basically sort of the director's way of validating, you know, white supremacy, white men, their anger at having their status dropping in society, and then voting for Donald Trump. And if it weren't for those sorts of guys, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in today. And then he goes on to have specific complaints about the movie, that a lot of the sort of antagonists to the Joker, he lists all the ones who are black rather than white, and says, you know, why is this? This is obviously, you know, it's a racial message. And I guess my first thought, Mr. Yang, if all those characters had been white, it'd be, Joker's so white. Where are all the minority characters in this thing? As you say, he synopsizes the movie relatively well, but I have to say, I think Mr. Yang had his mind made up about this before he saw it.
Yeah, and I think I have been guilty of this myself a time or two, so I can go ahead and make this criticism. I think, you know, he kind of figured out a nice argument that he could make, and now he is going to, you know, kind of pick the right pieces of evidence to fit what he wants to say here. And he knew that this would generate a lot of talk and criticism, other criticism, and that's why he did it. And there's nothing wrong with that, of course. I'm just not sure it is a legitimate way to look at the movie, and certainly not for most moviegoers. You know, movies have got to either work on their own terms or not. And for me, this one just didn't. I got to quote my old radio partner, Max Weiss, in her review in Baltimore Magazine. She said, you know, that a lot of the critics are calling this, you know, just kind of great acting. And she said there's a difference between great acting and a lot of acting. And there's a lot of acting going on in this by Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker. And I agree with her 100% on that. It's such a good line. I wish I'd written it. Why load all of this political baggage onto such a essentially slight movie? And again, that just, I'm kind of just amazed at the whole that anybody is taking this movie serious enough to talk about it like that.
Yeah, well, there's certainly plenty of people are. And one thing I think that may refute Mr. Yang as far as this being a political movie, we've talked about this a bunch in the past, going back, say, to all the movies about the Iraq War, something like that. And just with the exception of The Hurt Locker, which had a tiny budget and was pretty extraordinary, all the ones that had this very anti-war, this very political stance were big flops.
Yeah.
And this isn't, which makes me think, you know, this is a guy, and then director, pardon me, I've forgotten his name, did The Hangover. And his movies, as Mr. Yang points out, have gotten less successfully as they've gone on. And I have the feeling he wanted two things here. He wanted Martin Scorsese to think he was cool, and he wanted to make a lot of money.
Right, and he, well, I know he got the first, or he got the lot of money thing.
Yes.
And Martin Scorsese has said, you know, that he doesn't really consider the comic book movies to be real cinema. And I don't know how, that apparently has been kind of resolved. So he's probably flattered that somebody would go to the trouble of you know, commenting on all his stuff and having this homage to it. And by the way, that part of it is completely... that's legit. I mean, the references to Scorsese are all the way through the movie, impossible to miss, and very, very deliberate. That's not, nobody's making that stuff up.
Yeah, I'd say what I've seen of it, it you know, and he says it's in that Gotham City is a very thinly disguised New York, which would show he doesn't, Gotham City is New York. It's not even bothered thinly disguised. But it does seem, I mean, just from what I've seen, it seems very Taxi Driver, very 70s New York.
Yeah, and except, you know, Taxi Driver
is good.
Well, Travis Bickle did give himself the Mohawk haircut at the end, which I guess is kind of analogous to all of the crazy makeup stuff that Joker does. And, I don't know. This whole argument just kind of leaves me scratching my head because I don't understand why this movie is getting as much attention as it is. To me, it's simply not worth it.
I do have a couple other questions for you. I didn't realize that Robert De Niro was in it until I was reading more about it yesterday. Is this something? I mean, if you are a fan, is this a big screen movie, or will this be fine on the big screen in the basement?
If you're a fan, yes, it's a big screen movie. It really does depend on those visuals. And De Niro, it's kind of weird here. He's playing a kind of a variation on the Jerry Lewis character in The King of Comedy, where he was playing the sort of obsessed fan, and that's what Joaquin Phoenix is in this film. So it's kind of a double play on King of Comedy, which is one of Scorsese's. It was not a big commercial hit at the time, but it's one that since has become very, very influential. People go back and look at it. It's all about fan culture and obsession and things like that. And it's kind of, the times have now caught up to it because it seemed completely crazy and nutty when it was made, but now it
not
seems
anymore.
You know, it's completely normal.
Yeah, I guess as far as Joker, I guess I probably will wait to see this. I'm not a huge fan of the DC stuff like Marvel, but I tell you, give me Taxi Driver any day, I expect.
Right, I'm like you. I've never been a huge fan of Joker. I thought, you know, the Jack Nicholson character in the Tim Burton Batman came. He was, as close as you're going to get to having something really good with that. Everything else, even the Heath Ledger stuff, I thought was a bit overdone. But then I never completely understood the Christopher Nolan Batman movies either. So
no, it's a fair point.
I have a problem there.
I can only imagine what you thought of Jared Leto in Suicide Squad then. As basically, if anyone, Joker seems like a character you can't overdo until Jared Leto just told everybody, here, hold my beer and watch this.
Yeah.
All right, speaking with Mike Mayo here, we're talking movies. Want to see more of Mike's movie reviews? Go to mike-mayo.com. We're going to take a quick break here. We've got four movies coming out on DVD and pay-per-view today, so we want to give them sufficient time. We'll be right back on The Morning Show. 8:22, let's call it here, on The Morning Show. Ashley and Brian with you, talking movies with Mike Mayo. And four offerings today on DVD and pay-per-view, and let's get a clip. And I guess I am hopelessly out of touch because this is the third version of the Annabelle movies. Annabelle Comes Home, and first I'd ever heard of them.
She wants a soul.
Oh, good God. I just wanted to see him again.
What did you do?
I wanted to tell him I'm sorry. I know it was my fault.
What did you do?
I let her out.
Oh no, he let the doll out. Ah, gosh. Oh, good.
They should have called this movie "Who Let the Dolls Out."
So, Mike, what do you think of Annabelle Comes Home?
Well, this is in that whole Conjuring universe that they've got. There have been a whole bunch of these movies, and they're almost like they're very much like the Marvel universe in that they've got this really kind of complex mythology, and they go back with prequels and sequels and spinoffs and all that, and it all has to do with evil dolls like Annabelle, or evil nuns, or possessions, and all that. These movies are extremely well made for what they are. The special effects are fine. They stick strictly within kind of the rules that they've set up, and they have really established a big fan base of people who go to see them in theaters and then look at them again on DVD and stay really up to date with all of the details of it, just the way they do with the Marvel Universe. That said, I am not one of those people. I don't get that involved in this kind of stuff, and I see them as well-executed horror movies, and I'm glad to see people doing that, but they never really scare me anymore. I've seen all of the tricks that they've got, and so it fans, this is more of what you love. Everybody else, this is not, you're not in on the joke yet, so don't try to start here.
All right, let's move on to Deadwood, and we have a clip that doesn't have any cursing in it by any chance.
We who gather have known together some portion of which must still be measured in blood, yet the Deadwood community does enter its adulthood.
And don't our spirits raise? You murdering, conniving, thieving sucker.
Resourceful and resolute, a vital part of the new-made state of...
I think I know where the edit was in that
yes,
clip
yes, you
there.
Do. And that was Gerald McCraney you were hearing there as George Hurst. And he's kind of the main bad guy in this. Though it's a little difficult to say who's the main bad guy, since nobody's really completely morally good. The closest one is the sheriff, played by Timothy Oliphant. And that little growl you heard in there was Ian McShane as Al Swearingen, the saloon owner. Now, Deadwood, it was a TV series on HBO. Ran for 3 seasons, I believe. And it's all about the founding of Deadwood, South Dakota, before the territory was a state. And became famous as this is the Western series where everybody swears. And they do swear a lot, particularly Swearingen, who's very colorful with it. But the real story, the plot, was about how you create a community. Who is going to be in charge? What are the rules going to be? And there are all kinds of different forces at work there, trying, kind of jockeying for position. And even though Ian McShane was at first the worst of the bad guys, he quickly was eclipsed by these other people who came in. And this is the movie that would have been sort of the final season. And I'm not going to say anything too much about the plot. I watched it. I loved it. It looked exactly like the Deadwood movies used to be. It picks up the series, picks up several years after the series ended, when the state is about to become a state, and that's what they're celebrating there. If you're a fan and you missed this when it was first on HBO, oh, you've just got to watch it. And I'm ready to take another look at it. I enjoyed it so much. It's just really, really terrific stuff.
All right, we're running a little behind, so we'll skip a clip for Midsommar. But, Mike, I've heard this is a really good horror movie.
It is, but it's overlong, I thought. There was an R-rated version, and now there's an unrated version out, too, that's even longer. It is comparable to The Wicker Man, that wonderful, kind of stands-by-itself horror movie. There's nothing else quite like it. And this is the original Wicker Man, not the Nick Cage remake, which deserves a place of honor in the bad movie Nick Cage Hall of Fame. But let's just move on, because, again, this is the one for horror fans. This is really the top pick this week. And Toy Story 4 is our last movie, and it's the best animation I've seen this year. And just, I think, one of a fitting end, I hope, to that series.
All right, let's get a clip. Ashley, if you would.
My name is Gabby Gabby, and this is my very good friend, Vincent.
Oh, Woody, pleasure to meet you.
Well, it's nice to meet you, Woody. And you are...
This is Forky. I'm trash.
Our kid made him.
Kid? Toys around here don't have kids. Are you two lost?
Lost? No, but we are looking for a lost toy. She's a figurine, used to be in that lamp in the window. Name's Bo Peep.
Bo Peep? Oh, yes, I know Bo.
You do?
Hop on in. We'll take you to her. Oh.
So, Mike, tell us how much you love Toy Story 4.
I did. I've loved all of the Toy Story movies. And going back to, I remember seeing the first one and being, you know, thinking this whole computer animation thing, this just might work. And I was proved right on that one. It starts out as a road movie following the characters and the new family and everything on vacation in an RV. And that scene we just heard there takes place in this secondhand store. And the animation in that part of the film, which is essentially the second half, inside that store is just incredibly detailed and remarkable. I want to see this again just to take another look at that world to see how unbelievably realistic it was and just fascinating what was going on in it. The story's very good. It concerns, you know, the toys kind of branching out in new directions. And I wound up with, you know, a little tear in my eye at the end of this. It is that good. And Tom Hanks and Tim Allen are as good as they ever were in the voices. Just a real treat. This one is not just for kids. Adults will enjoy this just as much as the kids will.
Now, Toy Story 3 was supposed to be the last one, but it made so much money they came back for another one. Any thought that they might do that again?
They could, but I don't think they will. I mean, they shouldn't, because this movie arrives at a perfectly good ending to the series. It brings all these stories that they've been telling to a really good conclusion. Yes, they could go on, but I hope they don't. This is such a nice finish to it. They should just leave it at this. Maybe, you know, use the same setup of toys, you know, that come to life when the kids aren't around, but go with, you know, create a new world of that, a new world of different toys, different situation. These guys have had their run, and really I think we should not hear anything more from them.
All right, very good, and we will finish it on that note. Mike, thank you very much. We'll talk again next week.
Take care.
All right, it is 8:30 here on The Morning Show. Ashley and Brian with you. Coming up after the bottom of the hour news break, we are going to speak with Jennifer Woofter. She is a Democrat, and she is challenging Republican Kathy Byron for the 22nd district seat in the House of Delegates. So we'll talk to her a little about her, see which issues she is really focused on, and what she thinks of some of the current events, and you know, what she might do when she is in the House of Delegates should she manage to win the election. So all of that coming up. It's 8:30 here on The Morning Show on WIQO, Virginia's Talk Station.